are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this October 29th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on what is now a nice day in the Auburn Opelika area. The sun is out. I see some blue in the sky. I mean, nasty this morning. Cold, windy, rainy. Feels like winter around here. I think that's what the Seattle area looks like 12 months out of the year. So glad that that's gone away. Glad that you are with us on this Wednesday afternoon. And we have a jam-packed show for you with guests and content, and I'm sure some controversy somewhere along the way. Christian, happy Wednesday, sir. How are you, brother?
Happy Wednesday. Yeah, you mentioned it was hard to get out of bed this morning, man, with the rain coming down. It was a gloomy day, but no, it's turned into a relatively pretty one. And who would have thought that from the summer we've now completely flipped course of it being a beautiful day, you hit 2 o'clock and it stops raining. I mean, it's wild to think of that's how it's gone now.
Times are a-changing, man.
Are they? Are times changing on the plains, you're saying? Well,
Clip it.
A fantastic show again, as Jacob was mentioning, for everybody here today. We have a really cool article that Jacob was able to find and put together, talking about, funny enough, the worst officiating calls so far in the 2025 college football season. Also sticking with the SEC, some statements from Greg Sankey that have now been released in terms of the NCAA now able to gamble on professional athletes, right, with the players, staffers, and coaches can now work their way and place their wagers in the professional sports. But you cannot do it on college levels, and so make sure you're on the right tab. Greg Sankey made his public statements about all of those opinions, and then, yeah, Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 joining us here on the phone lines, as he does every single Wednesday at 2:30. A little bit of basketball preview and a whole lot of football preview. Maybe a little recap in there as well, with Georgia on the bye week last week. Before we kind of just bounce around, we got a little bit of World Series talk. We got some more playoff projection talk, and we just got a little bit more stats that I feel like hurt to say, but are giving the defense even more credit when you continue to look at everything that they do on that side of the football.
Yeah, so outside of our guest of Jordan Hill today, phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Your thoughts on Auburn and Kentucky this weekend. Your thoughts on the article we're about to review about the worst officiating calls so far this season in college football. Or anything else on your mind, give us a call. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. The text box is always open if you want to be a part of the show that way, with a quick hitter, comment, question, anything there. You could shoot us a message in our show text box at 334-784-1067. And this started yesterday, okay? This started yesterday when Pete Nakos of On3, one of the more popular journalists, writers, covers of college football, okay, he tweeted out, or posted, I guess, on X about 22 hours ago. And he said, working on a story for this week about the worst officiating calls to this point in the 2025 college football season. What are your thoughts? And I was like, oh boy, this will be pretty good. And this morning, at about 9 or 10 a.m., he released his findings. And he came up with, to this point, okay, with over a month left in the season, Pete Nakos of On3 put out an article of the 10 worst officiated calls so far in the college football season. It says ranking 10 worst officiating calls of 2025 college football season. And before we get into these, because yes, Auburn is the highlight of this, as you would imagine.
Hugh Freeze is the graphic, if that.
The fact that we are having to put this together in late October tells me there's an issue in the sport.
Yeah, it's not just a random hold in the second quarter of an SEC rivalry game. These are ones that already have significant magnitude on just the college football season as a whole.
I mean, this is a type of article you write in the middle of June when you have nothing else to talk about, when there's nothing going on. This is not something, and I'm not blaming Pete Nakos. I'm saying this should not be talked about at this point in the season. We should not have 10 officiating calls that clearly impacted games and the outcome of those games to the point where we can put a fine-tuned article together. This is an embarrassment for college football. This is an embarrassment for the SEC and the other conferences that are involved. So you can go check it out on three. Just look it up. Pete Nakos wrote it this morning. The 10 worst officiating calls of the 2025 college football season. Now, some of these you may be aware of, some of these you may not, and we won't spend a ton of time on some of these, right? So going 10 being the least worst, I guess. I don't know how you describe it, but
the
it goes
best.
Yeah, it goes from 10 to 1, okay? The 10th one is Washington called for a roughing the passer. This was during the Washington-Ohio State game where Julian Sayin was taken down for a sack where they call a roughing the passer. Good news is, on each one of these, he puts the video clip with it. So you can go and kind of judge it for yourself. But here's what Jed Fish had to say, the head coach of the Washington Huskies postgame. He said, they called roughing the passer. And they asked him if there was anything his player could do different. And he said, no.
Or if there's anything that you would teach him to do different on the tackle.
And it's not. This was a play where Sayin steps up, lets it fly, and the defender for Washington is hitting him immediately, hits him square in the chest, doesn't hit him high, doesn't go low, doesn't do a drop weight tackle or anything like that. It's simply just a football play. And it was called for roughing the passer. Of course, it extends the drive for Ohio State and yada, yada, yada. So that's 10. All right, you continue on. Bowling Green has a trick play that gets called back for illegal formation. Georgia Tech was offsides that wasn't called against Wake Forest. Okay, not going to spend a ton of time on these. I'd forgotten about this one. The Oregon fumble that was overturned on the road at Penn State in the third quarter. Oregon has the football. They get called for a fumble, but then they go and review it and call it back and overturn it, where Oregon would then go on to score and eventually win this football game. So I had forgotten about that one. You come to the SEC, first time of this one.
And it is funny being able to watch all of these videos again, which, again, credit to him. So you don't have to go and find them. You can just click on the link. You don't even have to have X or whatever social media that he copied and pasted it from. It's just right here. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you see all of these plays, and then you're able to see some of the quotes from the coaches as well. But to James Franklin, when I remember, he saying he didn't see enough to overturn the call on the field, even though the knee was clearly down.
Yeah, you get to the SEC. This is number 6. Vanderbilt called for targeting on Lenore Sellers after Sellers goes down from a hit from Langston Patterson from Vanderbilt. Final 2 minutes of the second quarter, goes to the locker room. Patterson was called for targeting. He was ejected from the rest of the game. And this is just a hit, man. This is just a football hit. I don't understand what else you're supposed to do. Linebacker comes straight up, got his hands up almost like a box out, and just knocks down Lenore Sellers. But because the quarterback gets hurt, he's called for targeting. It's the linebacker for Vanderbilt, and he's ejected from the game. Did you watch this clip just now?
I'm watching it right now.
I mean, yeah. It's just a free blitzer from the left side, and he just hits him high, not even high, maybe in the shoulders. Somehow Sellers gets banged up. We're not questioning that, but there's no way that that's a targeting call. That guy gets thrown out of the game. Give me a break.
It's face mask to chin at worst.
Yeah. I don't know about all that one.
Maybe it was dropped initially because they thought that, you know, there's the roughing the passer penalties for hitting the quarterback on the helmets, like with your hand or fist or whatever the case may be. And maybe that was why it was dropped. But, yeah, they even said that there wasn't even really a great explanation on why this was called targeting.
Again, we're ranking, or not we, we're going over an article from Pete Nakos at On3, ranking the 10 worst officiating calls of 2025 college football season. And don't worry, there's a huge Auburn tie to this in just a moment. We get to number 5. It's a play in a UCLA game that I'm not really going to concern myself with. UCLA and just not really in UCLA and Maryland. It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
That's terrible.
It's pretty bad. It's a, he calls it a ghost block in the back, and that's a pretty good way
and
to explain
receiver
it.
And the receiver is 3 yards away from the cornerback.
The fourth one is Virginia Tech called for a roughing the passer. This is a game, Virginia Tech and Cal. You can go watch that one if you want to. It's pretty bad as well. Then you get to the top three. According to Pete Nakos at On3, in his own article, the three worst officiating calls so far of the 2025 college football season are all against Auburn. Not in an Auburn game. They go against Auburn. The Tigers are on the wrong end of the three worst officiating calls in the 2025 season.
And the thing that's funny is before reading this, when you sent this to me, I genuinely had to think, which of the three?
Yeah, and you figured that two or three of them could have been in there, but I didn't think that they would actually go out and give Auburn the credit of giving them 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
Number three is Kirby Smart's clapping timeout call, where he was claiming that Auburn defenders were clapping after he called timeout. Play clock was zero. Georgia doesn't get penalized. Georgia doesn't lose a timeout. The play clock resets, and Georgia gets the playoff. Wildest thing I've ever seen in a college football game. That's number three. Number two is the Oklahoma hideout tactic touchdown. The illegal play that Oklahoma ran where they fake subbed off a guy, he stood on the sideline, sprints down, and he's wide open in the end zone for a touchdown, ultimately winning the football game. And number one is the Auburn goal line touchdown against Georgia. The Jackson Arnold runs in and gets called a fumble, and Georgia takes over, marches down the field, puts points on the board to ultimately come back and win the football game. So, the three worst officiating calls in the country so far this season, number one, number two, and number three, are all against Auburn. You can't make it up. You cannot make that up. Right? And so, when you start talking about where Auburn is as a team this year and what their record is this year, this has to be taken into account. And I feel like we've done a pretty good job, Christian, of doing that, right? This is not everything, but clearly it's a big deal.
Sure.
And this magnifies it even more.
It's crazy to think. And again, when you sent me this, it was like could it have possibly been the targeting with Kay and Lee? Was it the no targeting on Preston Howard? Was it, you figured the clapping, you figured the timeout or the hideout tactic touchdown. But the fact that there were, I had to genuinely click on this to scroll to see which three, because it felt like there could have been more. And yes, we've done a pretty good job, in our opinion, of letting everybody know that there are two things that are true at the same time in a lot of these scenarios, a lot of these games of, yes, Auburn having, truthfully, too many chances to still win a game when you're having to go up against plays and calls or no calls on in games that people that do not have any sort of ties to any of these schools or ties to Auburn see it as the worst three calls in college football. Again, and what we prefaced all of this is with is how sad it is, not against Pete Nakos, but the fact that he's having to spend time already. Not only here are 10 really bad calls, here are the 10 worst calls that have impacted games down to their final score.
And it's impressive that he did this in less than 24 hours. I mean, he tweeted this out yesterday at like 4 o'clock and put this out this morning. So credit to him for getting this put together. But you look at those three plays, two out of the Georgia game and the illegal touchdown from Oklahoma. Those are two games that Auburn had every chance to win, right? Those were two of the more winnable scenarios for Auburn, in my opinion. Other than the Missouri game, the Oklahoma and Georgia games were two of your better opportunities given what the stakes were, given when those plays happened, especially the Georgia game. Because we've talked about this already, what happened when Auburn was supposed to go up 17-0. Instead, Georgia goes down and scores a field goal, yes, but you go into the locker room up 10-3, and you felt like you were down by 50,
yeah,
where the team gives in.
After the 36-minute, two-minute drill.
Yeah, the team gave up. The coaching staff crumbled. They admitted it, and Auburn lost the football game because they got outcoached from that point on. They let a bad call negatively affect them from top to bottom.
Yeah, to the point where they could not go out and do the bare minimum of what they needed to do.
Yeah, they couldn't overcome it. And the fact that there were two calls in that game goes to show that, yeah, Auburn probably got hosed a little bit there. Same thing with Oklahoma. And that touchdown is not the only bad call in that game, clearly. But that's the one that legitimately directly impacted the scoreboard. Oklahoma had an illegal touchdown.
And how funny is it? How funny is it again? The fact that we could sit here and say, there's probably three or four more that we could throw on this list. The first drive of the game for Oklahoma, where it's 7-0 Auburn following the fumble, the scoop and score.
Yeah.
That's not on here.
Yeah.
But that's more of a, I guess, well, I don't know, because then number one, the fumble touchdown is an official view as well, not a true play,
mm-hmm.
or not a true outcome without being reviewed. So, yeah, the fact that that's not on there, and again, I'll forever say that Preston Howard targeting, or the not even getting the review, and we got to talk to Freeze and ask him about that after the game against Georgia, where it was Preston Howard caught it and made it 3rd and 2, right at the edge of field goal range. You get stopped on 3rd down and ultimately turn the football over because you're at that questionable spot for bringing the field goal unit out rather than it's 1st and goal or 1st and 10 rather in the red zone. I mean, there's so many plays that you can go back. And yes, two things can be true, but bringing these memories up don't necessarily make you feel very good.
Yeah, and those were all in the midst of a 4-game losing streak where, according to Pete Nakos, he says that Auburn was on the wrong end of the 3 worst officiating calls to this point in the college football season. But don't worry, Tiger fans. You still got 4 more games. See if you can get hosed again somewhere along the way. 334-321-1390. Phone lines are open. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. We're off and running here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Phone lines are open for the next several minutes. If you want to call in, be a part of the show, 334-321-1390. A reminder, Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 will join us. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll get him on to get caught up on Georgia football, Georgia basketball, and beyond. So if you want to call in now, you can. Or if you want to wait, once we are done with him, Phone lines will be open the rest of the show after that. Text box is always open too, 334-784-1067. And how funny this topic, Christian, has, I don't know the best way to describe it. It's exploded and then been retracted, and now we're just kind of in limbo about gambling on sports, right? And this one in particular was when all the NBA stuff went down last week with Chauncey Billups and Terry Rozier and all that about illegal poker games and fixing basketball games and things like that. Two separate situations, but the FBI got involved and it was pretty serious. The same day, or I guess just the night before, the NCAA said they were going to approve the idea or the ruling that college athletes and college coaches could now gamble on professional sports. And it's like, wow, the timing on this could not have been any worse.
Yeah, it's crazy that something big happens as soon as another big thing happens and it just covers up the other.
Yeah, crazy how that works, right? Well, because of all of this, and I'm sure this wasn't the only reason, but it helped his argument, Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, got involved and made a statement to the NCAA basically saying, hey, guys, maybe we shouldn't do this. Maybe we should, I don't know, reconsider this whole idea of letting 18, 19, 20-year-olds gamble on professional sports where they clearly have connections. And the same thing with coaching staffs and head coaches. Maybe we shouldn't allow them to gamble on sports that they are directly or indirectly involved in, given the situation going on around us.
He wrote a 2-page memo that quote,
yeah, he did.
That quote urged the association to rescind its decision to permit college athletes to wager on professional sports, and he described it as a major step in the wrong direction. That 2-page memo could have been like that old video from SpongeBob of where he's having to do homework but spends all hours and he writes "the" all fancy, mm-hmm. and it literally could have been Greg Sankey using that and just writing "use common sense."
Yeah.
Because you feel like that's where that is at in just this entire crazy world that continues to go on. And yeah, so now you're at the point of, because of either strictly because of him, and again, maybe not just because of him, but I'm sure that all of the other things coming out have helped his case. The NCAA has delayed the official athlete betting rule again after the memo. It was approved on October 8th in Level 1, or by Division 1. 2 weeks later, again on the 22nd, the Division 2 and Division 3 levels also approved the rules, and it was supposed to take effect starting on November 1st, but now it is being delayed just because, again, he used it's a major step in the wrong direction. And there's quotes that come out that say, we are equally concerned about the vulnerability of our student athletes. The combination of accessible mobile betting, financial pressures, and the social media influence makes the possibility of personal gambling losses and the potential for exploitation very, very real. And that's from Sankey's letter. And I feel like that is spot on the issue, just because, I mean, the way you look at everything is these kids are now making more than they've ever made before. And with their NIL and with all of the, again, the social media avenues of money being made, I mean, I just don't see how there was any way, if you truly used any sort of common sense, that there's going to be a greater good that comes out of this scenario.
I never really understood why the NCAA agreed to do this in the first place. I mean, it seemed like this was, and I think I described it this way when the news broke late last week, I think it was Thursday of last week, was it seems like this was another situation that the NCAA was just giving in on.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, you were giving in on something that was being put on you and pressured to do. I'm genuinely curious. I wish we could take a poll, an anonymous poll of, I don't know, 1,000 student athletes and 1,000 college coaches at whatever distinction, right? A head coach, OC, training, whatever, right? I wish we could take an anonymous poll and be like, hey, do you want to gamble on sports? Like, are you interested in this? Because we know the growing sensation of sports gambling. It's everywhere you look now. And so, yes, it is a growing idea. But I wonder how much pressure was put on the NCAA to do this. And it's yet another situation that I ask, why did you give in on this? There are certain things that the NCAA has completely mishandled because they waited too long, NIL, transfer portal, etc. But this seems to me to be on the complete other end of the spectrum, Christian, where it's like one little ounce of pressure and they just crumbled. They folded and they were like, okay, you got it. You want to gamble? You got it. Go ahead. And it's like, why?
Yeah.
This seems like one of the few times they could have stood their ground pretty easily, and it wouldn't have caused major uproar.
And if you're Division II and the Division III levels, you feel like there's no way that you can say no if Division I votes on it and says yes. And so Sankey calls them out and says, all right, NCAA, you crumbled under pressure. Imagine what the individual athlete that's making the money, mm-hmm. what they would do if social pressure gets to them.
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But most things that the NCAA does doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And that's why they're a failing organization and won't be around in the next several years. But we'll take a break. Come back, talk to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Figure out what the heck's going on over in Athens, talking Georgia football and basketball next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us on what's turned out to be a pretty day in the Auburn-Opelika area. And we bring in our guy who joins us every single Wednesday at 2:30. He covers the Georgia Bulldogs better than anybody, Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. What's going on, man? Did you enjoy your bye week last week and trying to get ramped back up for this weekend?
Yeah, no, it was nice. I appreciate you guys having me back home. Had the honey-do list and got most of that stuff taken care of during the bye week, which was nice because these next 5 weeks, man, they're going to go by quickly. And, hey, I'll say, if y'all are enjoying some nice weather in Auburn, be happy. It is rainy over here in Athens. It pretty much has been all week.
Yeah, I think you're getting whatever we had earlier today. It was cloudy, rainy, cold. I mean, it has not been pretty in Auburn the last couple of days, but it is now, and we're enjoying the nice weather here. But with the bye week for Georgia, Jordan, this is more for you personally. Did you get a chance to, I know, outside of the honey-do list, and you know we know how that goes. You got to take care of the things that you need to. But were you able to look around the SEC and kind of take in some of the other college football action around the conference and get a better scope of what's going on around the Georgia Bulldogs?
Yeah, I mean, it was a nice chance to kind of reset and check in on some other teams, especially with the fact that the only other SEC team with a bye was Florida, who obviously we'll get to in a little bit. But, no, it was nice to watch some of the other action. Caught a good bit of the Auburn game, then finding a way to win there in Arkansas was huge. But, you know, Oklahoma Ole Miss, to me, that felt a lot like an elimination game, at least for right now, with how the conference is stacked up. A big win for Vanderbilt at home. They're hanging tough. And, yeah, you know, the way the rest of this playoff race is looking, again, with, you know, a whole month left, you know, I'm really at the spot where I think that the SEC realistically could get four teams in just with the amount of other teams that are in the mix. So big test passed by teams like Texas A&M, Ole Miss, like I mentioned, Alabama finding a way in Columbia. It was an enjoyable weekend to have, not watching just the Georgia Bulldogs, but it'll ramp back up now. And fascinating just to see what the next month of football looks like for the SEC.
Yeah, you mentioned it, Jordan. Texas A&M, Alabama, Georgia, and Ole Miss are very heavily favored as of right now to all make the 12-team college football playoff. And a conversation that Jacob and I have kind of had here and there throughout the college football season, a lot of that being in the off season, of Georgia is in that third spot right now. Again, with A&M 8-0 in, or 5-0 in conference play, Alabama 5-0 in conference play, Georgia 4-1. They're a game out of being in that SEC championship in Atlanta. Are Georgia fans fine with that, of realizing that that's not truly what you're playing for anymore just because of the risk of having to play another game and risking possibly dropping a couple seeds? Is Georgia fine right now knowing they're in a prime spot to host in the college football playoff?
I think there's two different sides of it. I think the fans are fine with it. I think that, you know, it's so funny to be having this conversation this year because we were having this conversation last year coming off of Georgia's loss to Ole Miss and Oxford, where, you know, they were going to need a lot of help. And it was sort of, you know, the momentum in the conversation was, you know, maybe this isn't the worst thing. And then it was like a week or two, I think it was 2 weeks later, Oklahoma beats Alabama in Norman. Florida beats Ole Miss in Gainesville, and it winds up putting Georgia back in the SEC title game. They were actually the first team to clinch a spot in Atlanta. So I think there's that understanding that it wouldn't be the end of the world if Georgia doesn't play there. Now, I will say, if you ask the players and ask Kirby Smart, I think they take a lot of pride in playing in that game. I think they take a lot of pride in the chance to call yourself the SEC champion. I think even if that means more wear and tear, if that means less time off, that's sort of a burden that Georgia takes on. But no, I think fans understand playing one less game is not really that bad. I mean, it really may set you up better when it comes to the ultimate goal of trying to go out there and win a national title.
With Georgia coming off their second and last bye week of the year, have you guys had a chance to talk with Kirby Smart about anything that they may have focused on, or if they were trying to get healthy, or just what the game plan is moving forward with Florida coming up this weekend?
Yeah, you know, a big part of the conversation was about Florida and just what exactly we can expect from this Florida offense now that Billy Napier's out. And, you know, Kirby made the point that, you know, them having a bye week to work with, that does give them a little bit more opportunity when it comes to tinkering and tweaking things for that Florida offense. But at the end of the day, Kirby really emphasized, you know, at this point in the season, you are who you are. Now, you might pick up the tempo. He really talked about that. You might see the Florida offense play a little faster than they have at times. But, you know, there's not going to be wholesale changes. There's just only so much they can change within the time they've had since that Mississippi State game. And yeah, on the Georgia side, they've done a lot of self-scout, a lot of focusing on themselves. Huge to get guys healthy. You know, the offensive line finally was getting closer to full strength for the Ole Miss game. So then to have that bye week was really huge. And a lot of the conversation with Kirby, as far as the bye week goes, is the defense. And he talked about, you know, seeing this defense tackle better. Still got a lot of confidence in the group, even though they've started a lot of games this year slow and have put themselves in position where they've got to make plays late. Kirby still sounds really confident in this group. And you know, based on what he had to say, if they clean up the tackling and are able to make some of those plays on first and second down a little more often, the defense should be in pretty good shape going forward.
We're talking with Jordan Hill here of Dogs 24/7 on ESPN 106.7. And Florida is one of the many coaches that have taken the step of releasing their head coach of the duties here in the 2025 season, setting the record of head coaches that were fired before the month of October. Obviously is not going to be a big talking point inside the locker room while the season's going on, but Glenn Schumann is obviously a name that a lot of people are talking about. A lot of people, whether it's fans or specific coaches or ADs that are wanting to take that next step. He's been rumored towards the Florida job. I guess just your overall thoughts on where the SEC is at with the head coaching spot and if there's any rumors on the Glenn Schumann possibly taking the Florida role.
Yeah, I think with Glenn specifically, his name is probably going to come up a lot this cycle just based on the jobs that are going to come open. Now, I think with a job like Florida, I think they're going to try to get a bigger name, a sitting head coach. You know, Lane Kiffin's been mentioned with that job. I wouldn't be surprised if Eli Drinkwitz at Missouri gets a lot of run. But, yeah, Glenn Schumann, this to me looks like a great coaching cycle for Glenn Schumann if he wants to become a head coach. There's going to be a lot of jobs that open over the next month and change. And you know, some of those jobs that open, there's a lot of overlap with some of these coaching vacancies as far as who, you know, the athletic directors, the athletic departments, who they would like to see become the next head coach. So there's going to be teams that miss out on their guy. And, you know, I think right now it's so much easier to sell a sitting head coach, even a former head coach looking to get back in. But that Glenn Schumann's seen as one of the top assistants in the country. And he's a guy that has been in the mix for opportunities before. He got in the mix with the North Carolina job last year that Bill Belichick wound up getting. So, yeah, I haven't heard anything specifically as far as, you know, if he's a true candidate for the Florida job, but I think you'll see his name mentioned there. You'll see him mentioned, you know, if some of the other jobs wind up coming open in the SEC. I don't know how much there will be there with Arkansas, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see his name mentioned. And really fascinating to see how this plays out, because even if he doesn't get an SEC job, you know, I look at some of the opportunities that may open up because of coaches leaving. I think a great example is John Sumrall at Tulane. If he were to leave, I think that'd be a great opportunity for Glenn Schumann. I think that that just makes a lot of sense. It would be a great landing spot for a first-time head coach to get a Group of Five job and to be able to prove what he's capable of doing. So, yeah, not a ton of talk right now as far as Glenn Schumann, but I have no doubt over the next month his name's going to be mentioned. He may even interview for some of these jobs. I think this is a really good opportunity for him to leave Georgia and become a head coach if that is something he wants to do.
And we know now with the college football calendar being so out of whack, I mean, if Georgia continues to do what they're supposed to do and make the college football playoff, those interviews or conversations or phone calls, Jordan, could be happening while the Dogs are competing in a college football playoff.
Yeah, I really don't envy really anyone involved in this coaching carousel, because I've used the example of LSU. You know, let's say that Lane Kiffin is interested in that job. I mean, if Ole Miss is in this playoff, you know, and winds up winning that first game, I mean, LSU is going to have to sit on its hands and continue to wait for Lane Kiffin's season to end. He's not going to leave Ole Miss before they're done chasing the championship. And that's why ultimately, if, you know, if you put a gun to my head, I think Lane Kiffin is at Ole Miss in 2026. I just think that what he's built and the potential to compete for a championship this year and beyond, I think that he's comfortable staying there. So, yeah, I have, you know, I'm not envious of anyone involved in this, whether it's the athletic departments, whether it's the coaches, the agents. You know, that's what they get paid for. So maybe they're fine to have to deal with that. But no, I mean, the way the calendar is set up, and you're considering, you know, December signing day, and you're talking about the portal opening on January 2nd. Honestly, I have no idea how these coaches can juggle all these balls at the same time. And maybe the answer is they can't.
We're talking with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 as we look at Georgia's schedule the rest of the way. I want to flash back and just remind people what the Dogs have been up to. Beat Marshall, Austin Peay, and they got an overtime win at Tennessee to start 3-0. Tough loss at home to Alabama, and then bounce back with wins over Kentucky, at Auburn, and a huge win over Ole Miss before heading into the bye, where Ole Miss, again, clearly one of the better teams in the conference. Neutral site game against Florida this weekend, at Mississippi State next weekend, home for Texas, home for Charlotte, and then the game against Georgia Tech, which could be a top 15, top 10 game by the time that one rolls around. What can you tell us about this Florida team? Christian mentioned it earlier, no head coach. You've got a ton of dudes who are playing in this game but could be questionable, injuries all over the place. I mean, what can you tell us about Florida, Jordan, and how they match up with Georgia this Saturday?
Well, I think it's fascinating to see what the Florida offense can do now that Billy Gonzalez has taken over as head coach. Billy Napier had been the play caller. Ryan O'Hare is now taking over those duties. So see what they're able to do. And I think the thing, it's a very simple explanation for me when it comes to what's held Florida back. I mean, DJ Lagway just turned the ball over too much. He leads the SEC with 9 interceptions. So interested to see what they're able to do as far as putting him in position to succeed. And I want to say this too. I've been really impressed with Florida's receivers. They've got some really young, talented receivers. And they, you know, it's funny looking back at last year's game. Florida jumped out to a 10-3 lead. DJ Lagway wound up getting hurt in the second quarter. But before that, he had about a 43-yard touchdown pass that gave Florida the lead. You know, they've shown an ability to generate those explosive plays, and it's something that Georgia has got to slow down. And really, for me, when you look at the Georgia offense, I want to see if they can run the ball well. You know, I think it's fair to compare this Florida front and how well they've stopped the run to Auburn. You know, I mean, that's Auburn's greatest strength this year. And in that game against Georgia, they did a fantastic job of shutting down Chauncey Bowens and Nate Frazier. Georgia has really prided itself in being able to run the ball, wear teams out, wear defenses down in the third and fourth quarters. I think Georgia's got to be able to do that on Saturday, which will not be easy, given Florida's defensive front and just how much success they've had stopping the run this year.
And Jordan, don't want to wish away football season, but basketball season is going to be here before we know it. The Bulldogs defeated Troy 81-65 in one of their preseason exhibitions in Stegman Coliseum, with sophomore Cannon Catchings leading the Bulldogs with 15 points, but four Bulldogs reached double figures in the scoring margin. What can you tell us about the Georgia Bulldogs and what they want to continue to correct before their opener against Bellarmine on Monday?
Yeah, I thought that they took care of business against Troy, a Troy team that made the NCAA tournament last year. And it was a game where Georgia started slow shooting-wise, and I felt like finally got in a rhythm. Showed better performance from three in that exhibition. They started their first exhibition against Georgia State, really struggled from three, didn't hit a three-pointer in the second half. But you mentioned Cannon Catchings made a lot of plays, especially in the second half. Jeremiah Wilkinson, the Cal transfer, I think he's a guy that could wind up being Georgia's leading scorer this year, and he can jump out of the gym. He has been very impressive. Watching to see Blue Kane really become more consistent. The first half, he was very quiet, really turned it on, though, in the second half, so that was impressive. So, yeah, Tuesday night, 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 Central, they'll host Bellarmine. That's a team that struggled last year. I think they wound up with six wins. They're rolling with a new head coach, former assistant, who has been promoted. So they've got a good opportunity with the first few non-conference games to get settled. But it'll be fun. The Texas week for football, the Friday night, Georgia Tech comes to town. And I think that'll be a really good test. So hopefully for Georgia's sake, they can take advantage of the few non-conference games before that, get settled in, and get ready for what I think will be a really fun one in Stagg on Friday night.
He writes for Dogs 247 and joins us every Wednesday at 2:30. Jordan Hill with us on the phone lines right now. My man, always appreciate you and your time to give us the latest updates and our listeners the latest updates on all things Georgia athletics. Tell them where they can find you, all your work, because crossover season starts on Monday.
Absolutely. Dogs247.com on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill. We got the Junkyard Dogcast podcast on Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern. 10 a.m. Central, we'll have on Graham Hall from Swamp 24/7 to learn more about Florida, get ready for this big game down in Jacksonville. And I'll shout out any Georgia fans out there who want to come on the Junkyard. 60% off for a year subscription right now, or pay just $1 for your first month. This is a busy time of year, as you guys mentioned. We're still in the thick of football season, basketball season about to start up. Baseball is just right around the corner, and they've been scrimmaging. And can't forget about National Signing Day coming up, as well as the coaching carousel. So a busy time of year, and I hope the folks will jump on board and follow along with us on the Junkyard.
Everything you need for Georgia, go to Dogs247 with our man Jordan Hill. Appreciate the time as always, sir. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll have you on again next Wednesday.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Jordan Hill, Dogs247. Check it out. Again, they do a fantastic job, him and his collection of writers at Dogs247. We'll take our final break on hour number one, come back, and wrap it up here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, who joins us every single Wednesday, getting updates on Georgia football, Georgia basketball, and beyond. I mean, man, you look at that Georgia football schedule. They've got to be thinking undefeated the rest of the way, right? I mean, they've got Florida neutral site this weekend. Yeah, they got to go to Stark Vegas, but it's an 11 a.m. game next week. They host Texas. They'll kill them. Charlotte at home, and then they play Georgia Tech at a neutral site. That game's in Atlanta, right?
Yeah, that's Mercedes-Benz for the first time.
That could be really good. That will be the final test for me, I think, for Georgia Tech, right? Because of their schedule. They play NC State, Boston College, and Pitt. I mean,
yeah, it's weird. It's interesting to see, because this is one of the first times in a very long time where both of the teams have playoff aspirations. And so how much will the loser be punished in a game that ultimately doesn't matter for either of these teams?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, especially for Well, yeah, I guess for both, because with Georgia having a loss, I think they would have a little bit more motivation to play just to stay away from being a two-loss team, but that obviously is not bad enough to miss the playoffs.
Right, but imagine if you're Georgia Tech and right now you get up to a top eight seed and you're planning on not getting a first-round bye.
Team in the country.
That's what I'm saying, but you're not planning on getting a first-round bye, but you're planning on hosting. Would a loss then make it to where they're going to have to go on the road? So Georgia Tech just declined playing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We'll have to just see, because the first playoff rankings, correct me if I'm wrong, believe they come out this next Tuesday. This next Monday or Tuesday is when the first playoff rankings come out.
Yeah, I think it's like November 2nd.
Well, that's on Sunday. November 2nd is a Sunday. So whatever this coming week is, they come out. And so by the time that game rolls around, Georgia and Georgia Tech, yeah, we'll just have to see where they are. I don't see these two teams being a top four seed to get the bye, but both teams could be in a situation where they are hosting the first round of the playoffs. And so will we ever get to a spot where, let's say that that situation plays out, you come down the final hole or the final regular season game, Georgia and Georgia Tech are both slotted to host a first round playoff game. Could you ever get to the spot where the AD at Georgia and the AD at Georgia Tech send a message, send a note, send an email right to the College Football Playoff Committee and say, hey, can you tell us what happens if we win or tell us what happens if we lose? We would genuinely like to know going into this game.
I would. I mean, get rid of any sort of gray area of...
Hold them accountable.
Yes. Hold them accountable. Make sure that, hey, if we lose this game to a team that's going to host, we're not going to lose our bid. Otherwise, you're going to watch both teams run onto the field. The ADs are going to run through the smoke and stand at midfield for the coin toss and shake hands, and both teams are going to walk back into their locker room.
Which may be the reason the playoff committee would never respond to that letter or that email. But I think that's a fair question, and I think the teams, the coaches, and the players deserve to have that knowledge before they play in every single game. So that could be fascinating. Georgia and Georgia Tech in that regular season finale. We're out of time in hour number one, but don't worry. We got a whole lot more college football talk coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here at hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us as we get started in the second hour of today's show. If you missed any of the first 60 minutes of today's action, we had a lot of things to go over in the first hour. We talked about an article that Pete Nakos of On3 put out talking and ranking the 10 worst officiated calls so far this season in college football. Yes, he had 10 of them that he ranked that were the 10 worst calls so far this season, and Auburn had the 3rd, 2nd, and 1st worst calls of the year so far, all going against the Tigers, so that was exciting. Also talked about Greg Sankey and his hot message to the NCAA saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't allow athletes and coaches to gamble on professional sports. Maybe, I don't know, read the room a little bit. And we also talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. All of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, check it out on the podcast version of the show on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, we're continuing our conversation that we brought up yesterday about the college football playoff picture again, as the first voting is next Tuesday, November 4th, for the college football top 25. Rankings, what could happen down the stretch? Again, just looking at the total playoff picture as a whole and the teams projected by the conference. We're going to continue talking a little bit more about this Auburn defense again, as we found a stat that it really does hurt to have to say out loud from the standpoint of where Auburn is at record-wise, based off of just how historic this defense really is that Coach DJ Durkin is putting on the field every single Saturday. And then at 3:30, like we do just about every single Wednesday, we turn the page to our opponents and we get to give our initial thoughts for Auburn, Kentucky. Again, a lot of the true Kentucky breakdown will be a lot more of tomorrow, but just immediate thoughts, kind of what we want to see from Auburn and Kentucky inside Jordan Hare here on Saturday. And again, no guests scheduled for hour number two, so if you would like to be a part of any of the conversations or if there's any thoughts that you have on your mind and you would like to be connected to the phone lines, you would like to be on the line, that number is 334-321-1390. Any quick hitters, any questions, or just anything that you would like us to answer off the air, 334-784-1067 is the on-the-line text box. And again, both of those open throughout all of hour number two.
Yep, so you can get involved that way. We'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on anything we're talking about or anything else that's on your mind. And as we approach the month of November, we get closer to the college football playoff, right? We get closer to the release of the first rankings. We start to have projections. We start to eliminate teams, at least in our opinion, of the chance to make it to the college football playoff. And we got into this a little bit yesterday, Christian, just about the different conferences and the representatives that could be in the college football playoff.
Yeah, and before we dive into a lot of that, I know you had it on here. How about the Blue Jays, the ability to respond Game 3? They even up the series. It's now a best of three. You got to win two, and you hold the trophy. Really nice job. Blue Jays win at 6-2 in Los Angeles. You're then in Los Angeles before going back to Toronto for Game 6 and 7. So there's guaranteed to at least be one more game in Toronto for the Blue Jays. And how wild would it be for the road team to just win every game in the series?
Yeah, I mean, I give a ton of credit to the Blue Jays last night, man.
Didn't happen in Game 3, so never mind. But again, just so much credit goes to the Blue Jays, after playing two baseball games on the road, your ability to respond and come out with a big win with Vladdy Jr. taking Shohei deep.
Yeah, big-time moment for Vladdy, man. I mean, legacy continues to grow for him. And what's wild is Shohei still went seven innings.
Yeah.
Like, he still went seven innings after having an historic night the game before in the batter's box. He then comes out and has the energy to go seven innings. Now, a couple of those runs went against him. I think he got pulled with a runner on second and third last night before he got pulled. And those runs, I did believe they came around to score. And so, incredible performance from Shohei, but an even better one from the Toronto Blue Jays. And again, we'll have the radio broadcast of Game 5 for you here on ESPN 106.7 tonight. Don't worry, Magic Johnson says it's a decisive Game 5 because the winner tonight takes a commanding lead. Did you see that tweet today? Yeah, Magic Johnson, of course, partial owner in the Dodgers organization here. I'll pull up the tweet. Everybody's flaming him for it. He says, with the series being 2-2, Game 5 is very important. Whichever team wins takes control of the series. Nice. Is that how that works?
I mean,
when you're up 2-2 in a best of seven, is that how that works?
That's what I want my part owner saying.
Wow.
Real knowledgeable, it sounds like.
Speaking of part owners, have you seen the clip of the Colts owner going around where she wears a headset on the sidelines?
Yes.
Because she
takes notes on the field.
Because
yeah.
she wants to know and learn more about what they're saying, and she can hold them accountable and yeah. say whether they're full of it or not. Like, good for you.
It's awesome.
It's Ursay's daughter.
Yeah, she's taking notes. She's writing down the plays and then writing down the execution of it to see what exactly happens. And she does it in practice, too, wanting to make sure that receivers are running the right routes and
it's freaking awesome,
linemen
dude.
Are doing their jobs. It actually is really, really cool. But before we dive into the big playoff picture again that we're talking about, saying goodbye to a couple teams that can kiss their playoff chances goodbye, we got Ty the Tiger here joining us on the phone lines to start hour number two. Happy Wednesday, sir.
How we doing, man?
What's up, brother?
Not much. Man, you know, it's pretty cool that in our lifetime, we can literally say we've seen the GOATs of every sport play.
Yeah? Who are your GOATs?
Before Ohtani, baseball was the one argument we had. But now, that's not really, you know, I'll just go through them real quick. Obviously, it's MJ, Tiger Woods, Tom Brady, Wayne Gretzky, and now Shohei Ohtani.
There was obviously MJ. I mean, this younger generation is going to come for you, Ty.
It is what it is. I mean, I think LeBron is a more talented basketball player. I think he can do more things on the court. He can jump higher, rebound better, all that. But just as a GOAT, when you talk about GOATs, I mean, again, you know, Patrick Mahomes, again, might be the, you know, we get to watch him. He might surpass Tom Brady. He's more athletic, but Tom Brady is a GOAT.
Sure.
So, anyway, I just, man, what this guy's doing, I mean, you know, he had, here's the thing. They played baseball longer than any sport out there. And this guy had the GOAT of a baseball game in game four when he struck out 10 and hit 3 home runs. You cannot give me another stat line of any baseball game ever played in their 150 year of existence that's a better stat line.
Yeah.
Wildly enough, I think the one argument that I would give to that is that was – funny enough, Shohei's performance in Miami last year. But the fact that it's the same player that you're talking about, arguably the greatest performance of all time.
I think that this one's better, though. I just think that the way he struck out the first three and then lead it off with a home run.
Yeah.
I mean, he started the game better than anybody's ever started a game. Like, you know what I mean? To me, that was just the GOAT of all baseball games ever played. And it was in the playoffs. I saw a stat that said there's been and I can't remember if it's which one is which. It's either 12 or 26, but I think it's been 26 guys that have pitched 6 innings, 10 strikeouts, and allowed no earned run in a playoff game. And there's been 12 guys who have hit 3 home runs in a playoff game.
And he did so, both not only in a series but in the same game.
That's what I'm saying is he not only did it in the same game. He's 1 out of 12, 1 out of 26, and 1 out of 1.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I look at somebody, Ty, if there's people out there, and I obviously there are, who are in like their 60s, right, in terms of their age, they've gotten to see, no, like you were saying when you came on, no doubt the GOATs of all the different sports. Because golf, a lot of people say it's Jack, but you also have Tiger Woods. And Jack's career, of course, was, you know, 60s to 80s, basically. Basketball, it's either Jordan or LeBron. Some people put Kobe in there as well. You have Tom Brady, as you mentioned. Now we're talking about Shohei and Wayne Gretzky, right? He was from the 80s to the 90s. And I have arguments in there, too, about Ovechkin and Sidney and different guys like that. But anybody in their 60s and up has a chance to say they've seen the GOAT, even of different eras, which I think is really, really cool.
It really is. Real quick, I want to get in with y'all playoffs real quick.
Yeah.
I just want to give you kind of my predictions, man. I think you're going to have Ohio State is going to win the Big Ten. I got Texas Tech winning the Big 12. I got Texas A&M winning the SEC. I think those guys are for real.
Okay.
I think I think that that quarterback, I think Elko inherited a gold mine with all them Jimbo Fisher players that they bought and paid all them money for, the ones that stayed. And, I mean, I think they're for real. I really do. And here's the other thing. I think their schedule lines up perfect for them. I think the only game they have a chance, to, in my opinion, of losing is Texas. And I know Texas is down, but that's like Alabama-Auburn. It's kind of like Alabama-Auburn, but it's a rivalry. So I think they are for real. So that's my pick to win the SEC. I got Miami is the ACC, and I got Memphis is going to be my highest-ranked fifth conference champion to make the playoffs. League or conferences.
Almost like a lock.
Winners.
Yeah.
Right. And then I'm gonna be honest with you guys, I got five SEC teams making it.
Wow. Five?
Five SEC teams.
Jeez. So what, A&M, Bama, Georgia, Ole Miss, and Vandy?
I've got Texas A&M, Alabama, Ole Miss, Georgia, and Vanderbilt slipping in the back, baby.
How about that?
I think Vanderbilt's even going to lose one more game, but I think they're going to be the number 11th team ranked. And I think again, it's going to come down just like Clemson was last year, but I think it's going to be Memphis. I think Memphis is going to be the highest ranked fifth conference, so that you got to have one of them in. Got to get one of them in. So the debate is going to be who's 11 and who's 12. Who is 11? Who's 12? Because whoever's 12 is out. So I think Memphis slips in. I think Vandy is going to get the. I think they're going to get the nod. And then I think the only other team I think that's got a shot to really make it outside of. I mean, really, the only other plugs you put in there is going to be. You're going to have Georgia Tech, you're going to have Oregon, and you're going to have Indiana.
I think there's a lot of validity to what you're saying there. We're going to talk some more about that. Ty, good to hear from you as always, brother.
All right, man. Y'all be good.
Ty the Tiger with us here on ESPN 106.7. Calling in. Phone lines are open all of hour number two, 334-321-1390.
And again, for anybody that didn't see the other stat line that I would throw in there with arguably the best game of all time was Shohei. Again, this was one of the final games of the year. Trying to see if this was – yeah, this was 2024, September 19th. Shohei went 6-for-6 with three home runs, had 10 RBIs, and in the same game hit his 49th, 50th, and 51st home runs, also stole his 50th and 51st base.
They also reminded me on the broadcast last night about the rule change that they made for Shohei Ohtani as a starting pitcher batting order.
Yes. So, yeah, basically it's the Shohei Ohtani rule of usually once the pitcher comes out, somebody hits for him, you now burn the DH. Shohei can then go play in the field or remain in as that DH spot to where you don't have to bring anybody else in.
Yeah, I had forgotten about that until they said something. I was like,
and how good do you
crap.
Have to be to have that rule written right in there for you? It is crazy to look at it in Major League Baseball. But continuing our college football playoff picture, what could happen? Again, these were the 12 teams we talked about yesterday that are, as of right now, the favorites to make the college football playoff. There's four in the SEC, A&M, Bama, Georgia, Ole Miss. All of those four teams, I believe, have a 70% chance or greater to make the playoff. You have Miami and Georgia Tech in the ACC. You have Ohio State, Indiana, and Oregon in the Big Ten. You have BYU as the Big 12 conference champion, and then South Florida still has the nod over Memphis, and then Notre Dame, that independent in there, to give you those 12 spots. So if Ty's argument comes true and Vandy's that fifth team, either Oregon, Notre Dame, or Miami, according to him, would be left out of the college football playoff.
Yeah, there's a lot to debate there, a lot to look at and kind of decipher as the rest of the season goes on. We'll talk more about this and who could be in, who could be out, what games determine the college football playoff moving forward. We'll talk about that when we come back, because we're just underway here at hour number two during the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
Oh, goodness. This radio station, man. This place is on one. Oh, my goodness. I don't know how to transition out of that.
Doesn't help that nobody else was a part of it.
No. Nobody else is. No. That'll just be for me. What were we talking about?
College football playoff.
That's right. We were talking college football playoff. And... yeah, I mean, you just start looking at what it is and what it could be. And Ty says five SEC teams in. And I just look back at what has happened in the past when SEC teams make the college football playoff. And, brother, let me tell you, if five SEC teams make it into a 12-team playoff, the entire country outside of the Southeastern Conference will lose its ever-living mind. They will be so butthurt talking about the Big Ten, the ACC, the Big 12. And what I would say to that is, get better. I don't know what else to tell you. I can't help that the Big Ten has three of the best teams in the country and the rest of the conference is terrible.
And that's it.
I can't help that the ACC is terrible. I'm not buying Georgia Tech. I ain't buying Miami. And I ain't buying Louisville as a dark horse either. I can't help that the Big 12 is just cannibalizing itself, and Cincinnati might be the best team in that conference. Sorry, I don't know what to tell you. But that's the reality of it. And the fact that the SEC would have a legitimate argument for five or six teams to get in, that will just make so many people upset. And I hope it happens. Just because of that, I hope it does.
And if it doesn't, next year when it's 16, next year after when it's 16, there's going to be legitimate discussions of having eight teams.
And look, the Big Ten was supposed to be in a similar situation, right? Penn State was supposed to be in there. Yeah. You were hoping Michigan could get back to be there. Indiana wasn't really supposed to be here again this year, but there they are, right? That was just going to be a bonus for them if that happened. But think about if Penn State and if Michigan were as good as they were supposed to be, Illinois.
Or if Illinois was able to upset Ohio State, or Washington was able to upset Ohio State.
Yeah.
USC is right in that conversation as well.
So they've had their chances.
Yeah.
They just can't win. They can't do what they're supposed to do. I don't know what to tell you, man. Sorry. Good.
It's wild to think that, because again, with the 16 team, it was basically the SEC and the Big Ten agreeing that at least four will be guaranteed for each of those conferences every single year. And not only, but at least, and it's wild to think that right now you're at that point where five or six teams have a legitimate shot in the conversation in the Southeastern Conference. While we have a few minutes, this is something that we have on the rundown, but I don't have anything specifics. And so we're going to play a little game. And this was the stat that I talked about to begin the show of something that is not overly enjoyable to have to state when you look at Auburn as a whole, but it makes you feel better, I guess you could say. It basically emphasizes and closes any sort of book that Auburn is not one of the best defenses in the entire country, if that is one of your arguments saying that you're not a believer in them. So in the FBS, there are four teams that have not allowed 24 points or more than 24 points all season long. Auburn is obviously one of those teams where they have not given up more than 24 points in the college football season. Mr. Jacob Goins, who are the other three?
Indiana, Ohio State, and those two. I would put my bank account that those are two of them. I put my bank account that Indiana, Ohio State are two of the three.
I'd be very surprised if you picked the third, because you are correct with the first two.
I'm not looking it up. I'm really trying to think. Is this 24 or less than, because Auburn's given up 24.
Auburn is one of four teams in the FBS to not give up more than 24 points in a single game this season.
Yeah, Indiana, Ohio State for sure. And I'm trying to think. Let me look at this team to see if it's them. Nope, it's not them. Memphis was my second, was my first thought, but it's not them. They've given up 31 twice. No, it's not this team, is it? Hold on.
No, don't look it up.
My second guess was South Florida.
It is not South Florida.
Then I don't know. But again, confident Indiana, Ohio State, but sure. I don't have the third team.
Okay. Setting the scene for you once again. Four teams this year in the FBS have not given up more than 24 points in a single game this season. Team number one is the number one team in the country, the Ohio State Buckeyes.
I know who it is.
The second team is the number two team in the country, the Indiana Hoosiers.
We had a guess in the text box of Iowa, and that is not correct.
That is also not correct.
I know that off the top of my head.
The third team.
I'm right. FBS. Oh, no, I'm not. Wow. Never mind.
What was your guess?
I thought it was Navy. That was my next
guess. It is not the
Midshipmen. They've given up 31-31, 32 in the last 3 games.
They had to outscore Air Force, didn't they?
34-31 there. Yeah. 32-31 Temple. 42-32 FAU.
I need to wait for the music to kick us out, and I can say, you can get the answer when we come back. No. Ohio State, the number one team in the country. Indiana, the number two team in the country. And the number 10 team in the country, the Miami Hurricanes, have not given up more than 24 points the entire season in a single game.
Am I just now noticing, and that's a rhetorical question, because I'm just now noticing that BYU and Miami are tied at 10th. I missed that in this week's AP poll.
I guess so. Yeah, no, it's not BYU, it's Miami.
Why do we have ties in the AP? This is so dumb.
It's been a while since we've had that AP poll rant.
That's so stupid. Georgia Tech's at 8, Vanderbilt's at 9, and yeah, I guess I didn't look at it close enough.
You have a BYU, 10, and then
12. Yeah, BYU, Miami are both 10 because they have 1,069 points according to the AP poll. Nice. And then Notre Dame's at 12. That's so dumb. But yeah, that makes sense for Miami. I mean,
yes.
Thinking back to their games, I mean, they've not been pretty.
No.
Even in their loss, was only 24 to Louisville.
But again, Auburn is one of four teams, and the other three are ranked in the top 10 and have a 50% chance or greater to make the college football playoff.
And two of them are going to be conference champions, most likely. And the other one's going to play in the conference championship game. So, you know.
And then Auburn's 4-4.
Auburn is 500.
Woo!
Golly. My goodness. Way to go, DJ Durkin. You've done your part, brother. I don't know what else to say on that. So, speaking of Auburn and 4-4, you could get above 500 this season with a win over Kentucky this Saturday. We'll flip the page and we'll talk about the Cats coming up next.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. Phone lines are open if you want to be on the show. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Because now we flip the page, Christian. The win against Arkansas is behind us. We have celebrated properly, I think. And we now get to look forward to...
You celebrated?
I said, I think.
Okay.
And we now get to look forward to another home game for Auburn at Jordan-Hare under the lights at night. Because here come the Kentucky Wildcats. Here comes Coach Stoops and the Kentucky Wildcats. And we now look to them. And if you have thoughts on Kentucky, if you have thoughts on the game, if you're excited for it, if you're not excited for it, if you have a prediction, give us a call, 334-321-1390, or you could shoot us a text at 334-784-1067. And when you start taking a deep dive into this Kentucky team, it's not pretty what you're going to find here. 2-5 on the season, 0-5 in SEC play. Their only wins is a 24-16 win over Toledo, which, if you remember, multiple people had Toledo to win that game. Many people had Kentucky on upset alert in week one. And they beat East Michigan 48-23. They lost to Ole Miss by a touchdown. They lost to South Carolina by several touchdowns. Lost to Georgia by several touchdowns. Lost to Texas by three. And Tennessee by a lot. How would you describe the Kentucky Wildcats, Christian? Up to this point on a four-game losing streak, winless in the SEC, with Auburn, Florida, Tennessee Tech, Vanderbilt, and Louisville remaining on the schedule, how would you describe what Kentucky is this season? Other than bad.
A team that already understands its future.
Okay. How about this nugget? Remember that win over Eastern Michigan I talked about, 48-23? It's big-time stuff for Kentucky, right? Someone in our text box says Eastern Michigan lost to Long Island University this season. So, there you go, Kentucky. Nice win. Nice win over a team that lost to Long Island. Isn't that the team that played Florida this year? Didn't Florida host Long Island in the Swamp in like something, week three, yeah, or something like that? Am I crazy? That's an insane pull if that's right.
It is. I remember seeing like LIU.
Like I saw their logo. It's like a baby blue L. Am I right about that? How wild would that be?
Hold on.
He'll get there. Sound it out.
I see the LIU Sharks if that's the case. Yeah, it is.
How about that? Ha!
They beat Eastern Michigan 28-23.
Is that their only win on the year?
They don't even have, like, there's not a logo on
there's
on
not
Google.
A page. Oh, that's terrible.
It's like Joe Player when you make a brand new player.
Jeez. Anyway.
Hold on, here we go. Let me see. Their one win.
The Sharks.
Nope, they are coming off back-to-back wins over Robert Morris and New Haven.
Dang right. Better believe it.
Scratch that off your bingo card.
Dude, their logo is sweet. That shark is awesome. Is Long Island known for, like, sharks?
Oh, that is pretty sweet.
Is there, like, a shark problem in Long Island, New York? I don't know, man. I don't know. The logo is awesome, though. And their colors
that's your
are, like,
neck of the woods.
Yeah. And the colors are, like, the Chargers.
Alternates.
Yeah, alternate, like, color rush when they do those. So, anyway, Kentucky beat Eastern Michigan, who lost to Long Island. So, they're not hanging their hat on a whole lot.
Their jerseys are literally the Chargers alternate uniform.
Yeah, those are pretty sweet, in my opinion. But how would you describe Kentucky this year? Other than bad, how would you describe
them? Again, a team that knows its future.
Do you think that has played a factor in their four-game losing streak? Again, losing to South Carolina 35-13 and Georgia 35-14. Because they haven't played, in my opinion, like a team that's known their future the last couple of weeks. They took Texas to the wire and probably should have won that game.
Yes. I think that is the quarterback change going to Cutter Bowley, who's been a really, really good option for the Wildcats. Is a little bit turnover prone, but at this point, try and throw the ball downfield. He's got 1,200 yards already, completing 67% of his passes, 9 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. And, I mean, does exactly what he needs to do and has done a good enough job, did good enough against Georgia. They moved the ball, couldn't get in the end zone, but did enough to move the football. And then, yeah, you mentioned it, taking Texas down to the wire, giving Texas their official awakening in the SEC.
I look at this team, and it's the running game that they lean on pretty heavily, and I think they had to when Zach Calzada started the season as their quarterback because he just was not good, okay? He had no touchdowns, one pick. He was sacked a couple of times, and his completion percentage was a whopping 47. So
it's okay. He's been vocal already this week.
Has he really?
Talking about how it was a very dark year, and he felt like nobody was on his side.
I'm sure he felt that way, and good for him.
Bad for him.
He can enjoy his time when he returns to Auburn.
I saw something. He said he's going to be the third starting quarterback to walk in, or it's the third quarterback to walk into Jordan-Hare Stadium and not start.
A former Auburn quarterback?
Yeah. Maybe not, but like at Auburn as well.
That's fantastic. I look at the running game for Kentucky, and they've got some dudes who can carry the rock. I mean, Seth McGowan is legit. Dante Dowdle is a name that people were hyped up about preseason.
Very much so.
I mean, that's a stud, dude. Those guys are, and Jason Patterson, for what it's worth, on only 37 carries. You got guys averaging 4 yards a carry, 4 yards a carry, 5 yards a carry. Like, you've got dudes who can tote the rock for Kentucky. Here's my concern for them is Auburn's rush defense is one of the best in the country. Literally, one of the best in the country in run defense. Then you start talking about second level defense with Xavier Atkins, who's getting a ton of love this week for being one of, if not the best linebackers in the SEC, one of, if not the best linebackers in the country. And then the secondary, that's done a really good job as well for Auburn. This Kentucky team, man, they had Texas so close and they couldn't find a way to do it. And the difference that Kentucky is in the different ways that they look at home versus their road games. Man, road games have been abysmal for this team. And here's the problem, too. They've only made two of them. They've gone to South Carolina before we knew the Gamecocks weren't all that much. And they went to Athens, where the game wasn't terrible. If you don't give up 14 points in the first quarter, you probably have a shot if you're the Cats. But instead, you're just a team that... you feel bad.
I mean, this was one of the games that you looked at week zero or week one of Toledo going to Kentucky, and there were a bunch of people that picked Toledo to win outright, and they covered easily. I think there was 12.5 or 13.5, and they beat Toledo 24-16, but even that win didn't necessarily build confidence for everything moving forward.
Yeah, and there are 5 losses this year. It's a Kentucky team that's given up 30 or more points in 4 of them. So, Auburn... You're saying it's a defense that's vulnerable. Let's get to the phone lines. 334-321-1390. Matt, you're on the line. What's going on, man?
Hey, not a lot, guys. How are y'all doing today?
Doing good. What's on your mind?
Well, normally I would call in and talk about all the complaints about Auburn, but I listening to the Ty earlier, I had to touch on a couple of his opinions, and everybody's got one, right?
Sure.
I'm going to disagree a little bit on a couple of his choices for the GOAT. And I don't know how old he is, so I don't know who all he has seen, you know, in person or watching growing up. But quarterback, Tom Brady's great. However, you know, totally different eras. He you know, the Brady rules apply with him because – now you can't be touched or breathed on without a flag being thrown.
Sure.
In my opinion, Joe Montana, or as the water boy guys, Joe Montana, he was the GOAT. I mean, and he doesn't have all the records. He doesn't have all the Super Bowls, but he's got 4, and he only went 4 times. The man played in a day when you could hit a quarterback, and he took hits from guys like Lawrence Taylor, Mike Singletary, Reggie White, and played with and through concussions. Because face it, back then concussions didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion for the GOAT quarterback. Golfer got to be Jack Nicklaus.
Sure.
Simply for the fact that he played in an era where you had actual wooden drivers. The term hit it dead on the screws came from then because you actually had screws on the face of your driver.
Yeah, the technology back then was an eighth of what it is today, maybe.
Right. Right, yeah, the driver heads. The first time I ever played golf was some of my dad's old clubs, and they were the Persimmons Woods, and the club might have been 6 square inches, you know, for a driver. I don't know.
Right.
What I use today, actually, funny enough.
And the competition conversation is interesting, too, with Jack Nicklaus compared to Tiger Woods in the early 2000s. I mean, Tiger was not playing against the guys that are out there today.
No.
Even.
No, yeah, no. Jack was playing, you know, against Arnold Palmer, and you know the greats of that day are just they're far superior than you know the greats of today. The technology. I mean, I'm not the greatest golfer. I shoot in the 80s most of the time, but you know, in my best driving days, I might poke one, you know, 280. With the new technology drivers. This man was bombing it over 300 with a wooden driver. And, of course, the majors speaks for itself with 18 of them. But as far as MJ and Gretzky, yes, I'll agree with that. And you know, let's face it, when MJ was playing basketball, people don't talk about this. They played defense back then. you had in NBA games that were 94-90, you know,
right.
92-88. You know, and nowadays they just, nobody cares, and they just let them score. So you're going 136-130. In baseball, Shohei, he's in his own category. No, there's nobody that can do what he's been doing, except for Babe Ruth, and nobody alive has seen him. But then I hadn't watched baseball, Major League Baseball, since the 90s, since the home run chase.
Yeah.
But man, I like Ty and I like his calls. He's a good caller, but I'm going to have to disagree with him on the Tiger and the Brady thing.
I got you.
Just because of the, you know, they played in a totally different era when things were just way different and still exceeded and blew everybody away.
Yeah, no doubt. Matt, we appreciate the call, man. Appreciate you listening to be a part of the show. And that's what's great about the GOAT conversation, right, is everybody does have their own opinions, and there technically is no wrong answer. And I
don't know. Yours, I mean, when you said Mahomes the other day, and I was like,
no,
I
did not.
I don't know.
No. I do, however, dabble into – and I think I've brought this up on the show before.
Yeah, Bryce Harper, right?
Yeah. I do have opinions on Mike Trout that you won't like, but I have dabbled in the conversation.
Hold on. Let's have a conversation. Hold on.
I think Mike Trout is very, very good. I think he's very, very good. But people throwing him in the greatest player of all time is wrong.
I think he has a major asterisk of it's more of the if he stayed healthy throughout his career.
I think there's
which doesn't validate that conversation.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm not in the category of saying he's the best of all time by any means.
Right.
But
there are people that do.
Sure. And that's just because of the numbers of when he was healthy, but obviously you can't throw the what ifs or if he was healthy then this happens. So,
well, okay. I mean,
I thought it would have been worse than that.
No, I mean, Derrick Rose is in that conversation.
Very similar on the standpoint of
Derrick Rose, man.
Where you just watched and it was just absolutely insane, and then injuries took over, and it's the what if this didn't happen.
And I hated the Bulls. I hate the Bulls, but Derrick Rose was him. He was that dude, right? But no, I do like the GOAT conversation, but I also like the boat conversation. The greatest of all time and the best of all time. Because I do think there are separate qualifications there, okay? The greatest of all time, I think, is when you think of the sport, who comes to mind? Who comes to mind in terms of their dominance, of their championships, of their awards, of their
that was what I was going to ask was
things.
Awards. Which one does that go into?
It goes the GOAT conversation
because I feel like that is always the deciding factor of okay. How many MJ got? How many does LeBron have?
Well, right. And if that's the case, you could always go back and say, well, Bill Russell has the most titles. It's like, yeah, but he competed in an era with 8 NBA teams. You know what I mean? Like, there's a difference there. But that's why I think, like Tom Brady, he's the greatest of all time. Yeah, I personally think it's not a debate. But some people think it's Montana. Some would say Elway. Some would say running backs. I mean, there's all different arguments there. But in my humble opinion, I think Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback that's ever stepped on the football field. I think he's the best of all time. I think he's the most talented. I think he has done things that nobody else can do, has made plays that nobody else can make. Yes, I'm a Packers fan, so I am a little biased.
That's wild.
But I do think he's the best just pure quarterback that's ever played the game. But he's only got one title. He should have about three. But I think there is a GOAT in both. MJ, LeBron, same thing. Michael Jordan's the greatest to ever do it. He's 6-for-6. You can't beat that. LeBron James is the best pure basketball player that's ever walked the face of the earth, in my opinion. But he's not the GOAT because
except you on the 2K sticks.
Nah. I'm more of an Allen Iverson, go back and play with him type of guy on 2K. Love that guy. He's awesome. So I do think there's a difference there. I think there's a GOAT and boat conversation.
All right. So for Auburn and Kentucky this weekend, which one is the GOAT versus the boat?
In this game, I can't even come up with a joke. I have nothing.
No, that was just supposed to tie it in, but there's not really a...
No. That's okay, though. Do you not believe in the best of all time versus GOAT of all, greatest of all time?
No, I do, and I think that's a good point because, again, I feel like when the only thing you're able to hold above a player's head is a trophy or an award, especially when it's not an individual statistic, I think that's where there needs to be discussions, and that's why you could say even the GOAT versus the boat versus the GOAT for that era, right? Just because of competition and where, again, yeah, today's NBA is all about scoring, and you have your defensive player of the year, but it has no sort of accolades compared to what it used to be in a defensive league.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, defensive player of the year means who got the most blocks.
Right.
Like, compared to stats back in the day of how many points were scored against you, yeah. How much did you hold your assignment under their average that night?
Yeah, it's like individual plus minuses.
Mm, yeah.
Rather than it basically being looked at as, yeah, I only gave up 11, you gave up 42, and we lost. Now, because of that, I can't be looked at as a good defensive player.
Yeah. Well, that's what makes those conversations fun. They're all up for debate. And
the best thing is there's always only one right answer, and so anybody else's
opinion. And it's yours, not his. Correct. It's yours.
Only your opinion is right.
You are right. Everyone else is wrong. And make sure you put that on the internet, okay? All right, we got to get to our final break here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. We'll wrap it up after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a good show today, man. If you missed any of it, you can go back and listen to the podcast version of the show. We've talked about the college football playoff. We've talked with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. We've talked about Auburn and Kentucky. We've talked about the greatest of all time conversations. I mean, we've hit a lot of things on this Wednesday edition of the show. So if you missed it, again, go check it out in the podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
We talked a lot about, too, just a little bit ago, about how good Auburn's defense is. Again, they are one of four FBS teams to not give up more than 24 points in a single game. The other three teams are in the top 10 and well on their way to the college football playoff. A fun conversation or a fun statistic that we will leave you with today before we dive into a lot more of it tomorrow. Would you like to take a guess on what Auburn ranks nationally in touchdown percentage in the red zone?
Giving up?
No, on offense. Out of, again, I think 136 or 137 teams.
I mean, you're in the hundreds for sure. You're probably like 116.
126.
I was pretty close.
You're 126th nationally, last in the SEC in red zone touchdown percentage this season. Would you like to guess what it was last year?
Oh, God. You've gotten worse somehow. I know you've gotten worse. I'm going to go with 112 from last year.
Only four spots. You were 122nd.
Good Lord.
Last year.
I was 10 off both times. How about that?
Yeah. And so, again, for as good as the defense is, your offense is dead last in the SEC in red zone touchdown percentage this season. And I think I also saw something that said that Auburn went from 7th to like 115th or 120th in explosive plays this year.
Jeez.
For what felt like as bad as the overall offense was last year, that was the one thing that you could rely on was plays of 20 yards or more. This year, they're just non-existent.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll all be fixed this weekend. I'm sure it'll all be fine.
Drives of 20 yards is what we're going for. Or 280.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever tickles your fancy. So we'll talk more about this tomorrow. It's Thursday, a jam-packed show. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC, and a whole lot more. That'll be 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.